Blog Talk Radio.
To learn, a man is born that way, and this is America. A man is born to walk the land in search of truth and trust, to pass the road from hand to hand and change the things he must. Oh, this is America, this land of mine, home and behind, the land of the free and the home of the brave. He's free to talk and wonder why, what's on his mind, to sleep beneath the quiet sky, unfettered, unconfined. Yes, this is America. A man is still a man in spite of anything he says, and for his freedom he will until it's here someday. Yes, this is America, this land of mine, heart and behind, the land of the free and the home of the
willing.
that one heart, scorn and covered with scars, still strove with its last.
Acknowledging her, the Kim Weston Day in Detroit, that she was given that honor by Detroit Mayor Coleman Young on July the 18th, 1976, and also recognition to the DOTAs, the documented original Tuskegee Airmen. And today is Martha Reeves' show. With that, while we're waiting for Miss Kim, we're going to play another one of her songs.
That's life, what do people say? You're riding high in April,
shot down in May. But I'm gonna change that tune when I'm up on top in June. Say that's life. Oh, funny as it seems, some people get their kicks from stomping on a dream. But
Detroit. Can I get From Detroit. Oh, right on, honey. You from Detroit? Well, she's not only saying it, she's showing you. Can I get everybody right here? When I throw the mic out there, I want to hear you say Detroit, okay? Oh, no, we got to do it together. One, two, three, four. Would you tear the roof off the mother this time for me? One, two, three, four.
Detroit.
Hey, uh-huh, that's what I'm talking about.
Direction of Mr. Miller Brisker.
Well, today is the anniversary of when Detroit Mayor Coleman Young declared that today, July the 18th, is Kim Western Day. He did this in 1976. And Ms. Kim Western, if you're available, Ms. Kim?
Yes, ma'am. And I have Ms. Ms. Brown, you still there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
And we have Dota Fauntleroy. You there?
Yeah, I'm still here. How are you, Ms. Brown?
Hi, Dota Fauntleroy. How are you?
Okay.
Well, that's great.
And hello, Mrs. Brown. How are you? I'm well, thank you. And how are you, Miss Kim?
I'm blessed in the way you look at it. I don't care what the devil do.
Yes, you most definitely are. Well, today, July the 18th, in 1976, Mayor Coleman Young declared this is your day as Kim Western
yes,
Day.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, Antoinette.
Yes, ma'am.
God is good. That's all I can say.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And
all
I thank those, of you that are here. And something that I just recently thought about on the internet, Mayor Young was a Tuskegee Airman.
Yes.
And July 18th was a special day. July the 18th, the Tuskegee Airmen tour approving to society that they're as capable as any people. We as black people are capable as any people. We were made by God just like everybody else. So they were trying
That's
to say
right.
that the Tuskegee Airmen weren't qualified. But God showed them. And July the 18th is the day that they turned the war around. World War II was turned around July the 18th by the Tuskegee Airmen. And I wondered if Mayor Young, if that was in his heart, if he thought about July the 18th being a special day. I don't know. But I'm taking it as that's what it is. And for those of you that have not met Ms. Brown, Ms. Brown is the widow of a DOTA, a documented original Tuskegee Airman. Ms. Brown, welcome to our show.
Thank you very kindly.
Yes, and thank you so much for being with us, Mrs. Brown. I truly, truly, I just love you.
We've been trying to get her on here for a while, haven't we?
Yeah.
I've been trying. I wasn't sure of the time, but I've been calling Kim for the last couple of hours to make sure I wouldn't miss it.
Well, we got you now.
Thank God.
Yes, we
for,
do.
Yes, that we're here.
Yeah. And Dota
congratulations to you on Kim Western Day. That's quite an honor.
Oh, yeah.
To God be the good.
And you received it from quite a distinguished gentleman.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
And Dota Fontoy.
Yes.
It's a blessing to have you with us. We appreciate you hanging out with us girls.
Yes.
I think I'm the most blessed.
This is your groupie group.
Yeah.
That is so great.
Yeah. So what I've decided is that Kim Western is going to be Kim Western Dota Day from now.
All right.
Oh, that's nice, Miss Weston.
That's beautiful, Miss Kim.
Thank you.
That is beautiful.
We give God the glory, and we're going to hang on to as many dotas as we can. So,
right.
Yes, most definitely, because we definitely need y'all. We definitely need dotas. Yeah. We truly, truly do.
Billy Jones, Jason.
I want to say I am blessed to have in my neighborhood two other DOTAs. One of them, a very special person, John Curry, was a twin engine pilot, and he'll be 100 years old this month.
Oh, we should have had him on the show.
I would try to get him, but I don't think he doesn't. He's not able to participate for the most part, but I'll ask him.
Well, we won't worry about it right now, but what
right.
I was going to say, we can have him another day, Lord willing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He ought to be asleep.
Yeah, he is. He's a fantastic person.
Yeah, you said he was very significant in your life, didn't you, Dota Fontoy?
Oh, absolutely. He gave me my nickname. He taught me how to be a soldier when I was a little boy. When I say I was a little boy, I bunked next to him at Tuskegee, and was right after the invasion. I was moved to Tuskegee, and I bunked next to John. And John went on before me and became a twin-engine pilot.
And what was your nickname?
Baby Soldier.
Baby Soldier?
And that's because, yeah.
That's because you were so young, huh?
No, because I was so small. I was 5'4.5 feet tall and 118 pounds. So
it's interesting,
just imagine
that,
what that is. That's a little boy. Size 28 words and 13.5 neck.
And we were Antoinette and Miss Weston and I a couple of days ago was talking about height. Remember that lady?
Yes, we were. Yes.
With regard to Sammy Davis Jr. and Miss Weston.
Right.
And then before. Yeah.
Well, most of us short people are nice.
Dota Brown is 6'1".
I agree.
Oh, my. Yeah. One of my roommates who passed recently was 6'4". And he and I we were classmates. And you know they had those bunk beds, one over top of another. Just slept in the top bed, me. I had to climb up into that bed.
I wonder why. You wanted all that on the top bunk, huh?
No, I couldn't beat him, so I had to sleep where he told me to.
Okay.
Well, thank God you had a bed to sleep in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was very interesting.
And little did you know at that time that you were making history.
Absolutely. And I think back to all of the guys that I, the next in the room that I was in, there were two other guys, a guy Charlie from Pittsburgh. He could stand on one hand with his feet up in the air. That's how strong he was. But he was he would have been about 5'7". Something like that.
Yeah, and you know, I happen to
call his name because Ashford and I had to put him in the shower.
I was looking at a photograph today, and Miss Weston, I don't know if you and Antoinette know, but for the first time in history in 2010, the Tuskegee Airmen was asked to be on the Rose Bowl Parade float.
Right, and Francis Ashford was a part of it.
They asked 16 Dovers from around the country to be on the float. I was there with my husband. He was on the float. I happened to look at the picture hanging today, and all 16 of those men are gone. Alexander Jefferson was the last living one.
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's why God put
it. My classmate, Francis Ashford, sent me pictures of that float.
It was beautiful. It was Robert Ashby was on that float.
Mm-hmm.
Charles McGee was on the float.
On that float.
Granville Coggs, Alexander Jefferson, my husband, Larry Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Lumpkin was on there.
Lumpkin and Higginbotham?
Both Higginbothams. Robert and Mitch Higginbotham.
Right. And Robert was in my class.
Really? And Thurston
45 I.
And they're all gone. And as I look at this beautiful picture, and I was there with them at that time, and I can't believe they're all gone.
Oh, I'll be gone.
See how blessed we are to have Dota Foster with
us. Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I'm I'm very happy to be associated with those guys. They did so much in my life because I was a teenager who hadn't graduated from high school, and they made me a man.
There you go.
From a boy.
There you go.
Well, they made you a fine man. They made you a fine man. But all of the Fontori brothers appear to be fine men.
Well, I take a little credit for that.
Okay.
Yes.
You're the oldest.
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
We have since contacted West Covina to try and have the Dodas on another one of the Rose Bowl floats, but the ball keeps dropping. We would like to do it again, and they would like to do it again.
Right.
But I just don't know. You know, there were some great men that I just named on that 2010
Absolutely.
Float.
Right. Lumpkin, I knew him because I met him
several
times.
I love Ted.
Yeah. We had a picture taken with the librarian at the University of California in Berkeley.
Yeah.
And in that picture are Higginbotham, and I'll just name Higginbotham, McGee. Cicero, Satterfield. That was one of the
best.
Cicero was a mechanic. I think he was a mechanic, but he's the reason I started going to Tuskegee Airmen conventions. Every time I saw a picture of the convention, there was Cicero.
I talked to Jerry Burton yesterday and asked him to contact you and for them to register you for the convention, and he said he had you covered.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
I'll see you and Kim at the convention.
Right. Okay. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I got to talk to the man upstairs and make sure I'm around.
There you go.
Well, we're talking to him with you and for you.
Okay. Well, no, you talk for him, for me, and everybody else that wants to salute those men who did so much for our country.
You're right.
Back in World War II.
They did.
Yeah.
That's why I say the whole world deserves.
Yeah.
The whole world was blessed by the Dodas. I said, thank God for the Dodas.
Exactly.
It would be a completely different world if they were not around.
If they had not been around
to
fight that war.
We probably
stand on their shoulders. One of my aides today showed me pictures on his phone of the Tuskegee Airmen, including me. But they had my name under a picture that was not me, and that it was.
Oh no!
People make mistakes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Flowers. They had my name under flowers.
Oh,
name in
I know.
The school. In the district of in Maryland, that is named for flowers. He was one of the few Tuskegee Airmen who finished the program to become a pilot and then became an instructor.
And do you know he's the oldest living Doda? He's 108 years old. We got to get him. He's 108 years old.
Wow.
Oh, bless the Lord. Oh, bless the Lord.
I'm just saying, my thing is that we as a people, I think that's how it started with me, and we as a people don't give honor where honor's due among us. We praise everybody else, but we don't give honor. We need to find him. Can't wait till next year.
Oh, I know how to find him. I mean, I text him and talk to him.
Good.
Antoinette.
Yes, ma'am.
The dry bones is the valley of the dry bones connection. And that's what I'm trying to do with dry bones. Connect us with those that we need to be connected to. One of the biggest blessings is finding dry bones, Antoinette,
And I want to thank Dry Bones. I haven't talked about him in a while. God bless you, Dry Bones, wherever you may be. But thank you for listening to God to put this together, because that's what I put God has on my heart. For us to be able to have Dota Foxworth, who is 96 years old.
I'm telling you.
He's 96 years old now, and God has blessed us to have him with us. And we need to start giving honor where honor is due. And that's what this is about to me. And I just want to tell you.
I stand on the shoulders of some great men.
We need to take that's one of the problems with us in the future, that we don't honor each other. We praise everybody else, but we don't give the honor due. If there's honor, it came from God. So when we honor those that God has blessed, we're blessed to be able to honor, you know?
Well, you know, Tim, one of the things that when the 300 of us were at the Capitol and the president saluted us.
Sure right? did.
He,
and he said it was Bush years too late. Bush.
And
I was
the picture,
in the room with you guys.
Yeah, the picture that you that most that I've seen anyway has Jeff, Colonel McGee, and Lee Archer were standing beside him when he did it.
And Roscoe Brown. I'm
right.
looking at the
and
picture.
Also, right, right, and Brown.
And Roscoe. I'm looking at the
right.
picture now. You don't have a copy of the picture, Dota Roy?
Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying. I don't have it. I'm not looking at it.
Oh.
But, I remember that day.
Yeah,
primarily because two things happened that day that stuck in my mind. I had my wife and my son with me. And two things happened that... this congressman from who was the Republican, I forget what he was, but he kept saying Tuskegee.
Oh, that made Larry was so frustrated. He said,
angry.
Larry said if he's going to stand up there, you would think he could learn how to pronounce
it as many times as it was said before him. And the other thing... The other thing, like I said, was the salute from President Bush. They never received, particularly from white soldiers or white people in the Tuskegee area. And
that's right.
You know, most of us never went into Tuskegee City. We went to Tuskegee Institute at the time. And the theaters there, or the theaters on our base. And even on our base, that was a special thing that Noel Parrish
took away. That's right. And Antoinette, we talked about the Parrish family, Ms. Parrish. So that's the white gentleman we were telling you about.
No,
the white family that still donates. And Dota Fauntleroy, I don't know if you are aware, but about 3 weeks ago, Shepherd Air Force Base here in Texas, in Wichita Falls, Texas, I was invited. I don't know if you got it, but they renamed the intersection of Fifth Avenue and Avenue G to Tuskegee Airmen.
Right.
And then, you know, we have an upcoming event. If you don't know about it, it's the weekend of October 18th, where they're going to Shepherd's Air Force Base in honor of that mutiny that James Warren wrote the book about.
Right.
And they want all the DOTAs that's available
to
be at that program apologize to each of them individually, and they want, if they're gone on, they want their families there because America said they want to apologize to the DOTAs for that behavior. So I'll make sure that Jerry keeps you
Yeah, I'm making a note on my calendar to make sure Jerry makes you aware of that event.
Well, I hope we can get John Curry, who participated in that 477 stuff up there in Indiana.
Because the guy that wrote the Tuskegee Airman that wrote the book, Lieutenant Colonel James Warren, he has passed on. He passed about 4 or 5 years ago. His son is actually he's on the board of directors with us, James Warren, and his son is the one that sent out the invite.
Oh, okay.
For all of us. As a matter of fact, while I've got you guys on the phone, I'm going to find that invite and send it to you.
Okay. John Curry, as I said, who was a twin engine pilot, was involved in that thing. And
so was James.
I wish I could tell people how much John did for me. And he's a man with great sense of humor. We had a parade for him, and we wanted to have a parade for him, but he said no. He didn't want a parade. But he and his wife said, but I want Billy here with me. So we had a birthday party with him at his house. Two of the ladies, Rosemary Crockett and there was somebody else, and myself, were there with him and his wife. The effect he had on me as a teenager, I wish I could explain, because my father was my idol, but I met men who had a lot to do with making me better than I was. They were Tuskegee Airmen.
Though the front row, the ceremony is October 6th through October 10th, which is over Columbus Day. Mm-hmm.
Okay. October 6th, October
10th. I'll get the information to you. I'll text it.
I'm a snail mail.
Okay. I can do that too. I'm a snail mail too the majority of the time. So if you meet me at Freeman Field. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you send that to me in the email, I'll never get it.
Okay.
Kim knows, because she tries to do it, but I don't know how to get stuff like that.
That's not a problem. I'll send you a hard copy of the invitation. I have it in my hand now, so
okay.
I'll leave it on this table so I can make a copy to send to you.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if Jerry knows.
Jerry knows. I had to remind him yesterday that event was still going on.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, was he planning on being present, and he said yes.
Yeah, great.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I saw he was here for General McGee's name being put on a library in Montgomery County.
And I don't know if you're aware, but Boeing aircraft also with that new Red Hawk.
Yeah.
They're trying to do something for the surviving DOTAs, surviving spouses and the DOTAs.
I was at a thing with then Colonel McGee when they talked about the airplane they wanted to donate. I'm not donate, but to start building in Tuskegee.
That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a project that's on the way, and they just in the end of April they had Charles McGee's family there.
Right.
And I think it was Dota Hardy.
Yeah, Hardy. You know, I saw him on television the other night. When I can't sleep, I turn to television, and I saw him on television. And you know, he's in the Washington metropolitan area. I had no idea that he and I had the same experience of going in the service, except that I hadn't graduated from high school. He had just graduated from high school, and he went in and couldn't drive a car. And I was the same thing. I could fly an airplane, couldn't drive a car. Because I lived a block and a half from U Street, and that's where all the activity took place in the back neighborhood. People who lived in other areas came to U Street.
Well, there's a lot going on. I have to just make sure I keep all of you in the loop. So
thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
All of you know what is going on.
Okay.
Because they're doing a lot in recognition. It's been a long time coming, but
yeah,
thank God it's here nonetheless.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
All of the donors can't be here, but for those of you that are here, I really hope and pray that you can make as many of them, as many events as you possibly can.
Right. I was surprised to find out that I wasn't the youngest.
That you were not the youngest, huh?
Yeah, I thought I was the youngest daughter for you. Well, I am the youngest daughter in this area.
In that area, yeah.
Yeah, but when you told me about the guy who was 93 years old, hey, he's just a little boy. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, when I say I'm keeping Joda Fauntleroy informed, that also goes for Miss Weston and Miss Poindexter. When I say I'm keeping you guys involved, that means all of you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's not anything that's secretive. I think all of you should know that the donors are being recognized, and and if you don't know about the mutiny at Freedom Field, I would suggest you guys read up on it. It's very interesting.
Oh,
well,
okay.
We don't want to wait for them to read, because if they ain't really by now, they ain't going to read it. But they can go to YouTube.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm saying if you don't know what it's about, it might be good to look it up and become familiar with it, you know?
Well, that's my purpose. My purpose is, like I said, when we started out, we give homage to everybody but us. And that's one of the reasons
you're in
the situation we're in. And that's what the Tuskegee Airmen were all about. They were determined to let the world know we're all made by golly, nobody better than nobody else.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what we're supposed to do is to give honor where honor is due, don't care what color it is.
Right.
I agree with you. You get no argument from me.
Yeah. Me either.
I agree.
You know, like I tell Kim and I've told everybody I talk to that God blessed me as a little boy who had not graduated from high school. I don't know how and I was able to even qualify to be with these men, but I was. And like I tell everybody, I had to beg my mother to let me enlist when I was 17 years old. And they put me in the reserves until I was 18 years old when they called me into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that time, see, I quit high school at 16 to go work in the government. I had a government job making $1,200 a year in 1942 when the war started.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, 16 years old. My mother tried her best to make me understand that, you know, my responsibility to myself and my family, and I understood my responsibility to my family because on payday, I would come home, and the first thing I did was donate to whatever my mother and father needed for the seven children that they had.
Yeah. Oh, Miss Weston,
Yes, ma'am.
You know who called me at 11:30 last night looking for you?
Who is that?
Mr. Phil Dixon.
I'll be done.
I told him, I said, Phil, where I come from in Louisiana, when someone is talking about you and you end up calling, that means you're going to live a long time. And he said, I hope so, Mrs. Brown. But he said, she has been on my mind and on my heart. And he said, I'm going to call her. Please call her and let her know that we're going to talk soon.
Oh, gee. That lets me know. That's God letting me know I'm on the right track. Miss Brown, would you tell everybody who Phil Dixon is?
He is an author. He's authored, and he's a PhD researcher. He's a well-published author, particularly as it relates to the Negro Baseball League.
Okay, yeah, I have a book with it. In fact, I think that's who wrote it.
It probably is, and I introduce him to Miss Weston, and he wants to write Miss Weston's story.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. He got it.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Miss Weston just asked me about him the other day, and I said, I know he's traveling. She said, would you call him and ask him if we can talk, and no one calls me at 11:30
at night,
that I will answer. But Phil Dixon is someone that I will answer because my father-in-law is being inducted in the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame. And
that's
at Cooperstown next weekend, and I can't go. So Phil is representing me and my family. So I gave him the VIP ticket so he could go.
Okay. Okay. She lets me know I'm on the right track. Thank you, Lord.
Yeah. Oh, that is wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy
my
for
father
that.
Was a he played in the he was a semi pro who played in the Black League. We played in Richmond one Sunday and Baltimore the next Sunday, but we were Washington Hillsdale's semi-pro team, and my daddy was pretty good at it. And
really?
Yeah, I was the bat boy.
My husband was the bat boy for the Memphis Red Sox.
Right. And I kidded my mother after I was an adult and married. I used to kid her. I said, you sent me with Daddy so that to keep the ladies from him.
Well, you know, Antoinette, was that your grandfather you say played in the Black League?
Yeah, and it was interesting because, Antoinette, I also mentioned last night to Phil Dixon about your grandfather, and he said while he's at they're staying in Albany, New York. He and his son is going. Yeah. And he said while he's there, he's going to do some research on your grandfather.
Right.
Oh, great. That's great. Thank you so much. That is great.
Yeah.
See what's happening when you reach out to us folk?
You never know.
Yes.
Never know.
Yes, that is so true. That is so
true. Is good. I'm gonna tell you all something. Antoinette and I slept all day. She's in Delaware. I'm in Detroit, right? And we both woke up frantic. But I'm gonna tell you this: I've enjoyed this so much tonight. Just letting God put it together. You see what I'm saying?
All right.
Yeah.
And Antoinette, Miss Brown and Mr. and Dota Fogler are together, you don't get a chance to say too much.
Oh. We have so much in common.
You
too. Right. Without knowing.
Without knowing.
I meant to ask Miss Brown, does she know the captain of my class who was the first Black councilman in Detroit? And that was Bill Patrick.
You can't, every time you say his Every time you say his name, it seems like some flashes. So I'm really.
Did you know him, Miss Weston?
Not that I know of, because he was councilman when I was little.
Oh, okay.
Before I got into politics.
Yeah, William T. Patrick Jr. was the captain of my class, and he was from Detroit.
Wow.
But then, you see what God did with me? When I said with me, he did it with a whole bunch of other folk also. But he put me in a place where I could see men like Bill Patrick, who was in law school when we were in. He had just graduated from college and he was in law school. But he was the captain of our class. And I can see him every time I walk through. I've got a picture of our class in my living room. And every time I get up and get to the living room, there's Bill Patrick sitting in the middle and me sitting on the end frowning.
You frowned.
Why were you frowning?
I had to run to get in the picture. I was flying when they put the class together, and I had to run to get in the picture. And I didn't have everybody else was smiling but me.
That's all right, you own that.
Yes. Now, I have to ask Miss Kim a question. Miss Kim, now, Mayor Young dedicated this day as your day. What made him really notice you? And not only that, what was your idea behind the festival? What made you start the festival?
But let me tell you something. Paul Stewart Davis sent me for my 80th birthday. He put together a CD, and in the notes he mentioned July 18th is Kim Weston. I forgot all about it, Internet. I forgot that the mayor of Detroit had proclaimed the day after me in 1976, because the day was never celebrated. But one of the reasons, when I look back to school and I look back to find out what was really happening, it was one of the reasons is because of my dedication in trying to get Mary Young elected. Because when I came back from California, they had this department in the police department called Stress. And everywhere I looked, I saw young black boys stretched up against a wire fence in a car, down on the ground. And I told Mayor Young I'd do whatever was necessary to make sure that was eliminated. So I didn't even know Mayor Young. I knew he was a senator. I knew people in his family, Dr. Carl Young, who was president of SCLC. I worked hard with him. Well, I didn't know Mayor Young had paid me any attention during that time, because I didn't even know him, you know. But Congressman John Conyers introduced me. And I worked close with him. I worked with Dota Fonzroy's brother, Walter Fonzroy. I didn't know nothing about him.
How was he doing, Dota Fonzroy?
Huh?
How's
your brother
doing?
He's doing better. I talked to him today, in fact, because I forgot his wife's birthday, which is July the 8th. And I called today, and before I talked to him, I talked to her. They're in a nursing facility out in Maryland together. They have guardian and conservators taking care of them.
Conservators.
I'm not pleased with the conservator.
I was going to.
And guardian, but there's nothing I can do about it.
I was going to tell you about 6 months ago, and I don't know whether I told Miss Western or Antoinette about this, but the San Antonio chapter reached out to the board of directors for help because there was a donor in San Antonio, he and his wife. She was in a nursing home. He was still staying in the home. They had a son, but he lived on the East Coast somewhere. Apparently, he did not stay in touch
with his parents.
So the state of Texas appointed a conservator. Exactly, over their property in San Antonio, and they were originally from Lynchburg, Virginia. So that conservatorship person was also over that property. Somehow the son found out, and when he came to the house in San Antonio, they had stole everything out of the house.
Oh, no.
They had sold the house and the property in Lynchburg, Virginia. He never got a penny. And the only thing he was asking them to do was to please return the congressional gold medal that his father received at the White House in 2007. And the conservator of the estate said he had no idea where it was. Too bad. So you see, a lot of these young folks don't stay in contact with their parents.
That's so true.
As long as my parents were alive, I called my parents every day.
Yes.
I still call the donors that have surviving spouses. We do what we call is a sister check on each other at least 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see if anyone needs anything, if there's anything we can do to help.
Right.
But people, a lot of people are like all of us getting together. Most people don't do that. They don't take the time out to talk to one another and just say, how you doing? Is there something I can do for you? Pray for you. Pray for me. People don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
You know, the courts don't do what they should do, in my opinion, don't do what they should do to make sure that the conservator doesn't take advantage over whoever he is the conservator for. I have a car parked in my driveway that belongs to my brother Walter. I can't get the tags for the car because I don't own it. And so it just sits in the driveway. And he bought the car for my wife. My wife had multiple sclerosis, and she was in a wheelchair. And, of course, I had a regular car that I could move her around in. And Walter bought this van and had a seat put in there that would come out from the passenger side and lower, so I could put her in the car or take her out of the car to the wheelchair, and that was back in 2004.
See?
And like I said, I think the courts don't check on these conservators to find out if they're taking care of whoever they're supposed to, or taking care of themselves.
Let me tell you a story that happened to me. My husband has a lot of pictures in the house of his mother, his grandmother, and his father. And they're with his father playing with different teams in the 1920s, 30s, 40s. I'm an avid book reader. Every week in Sacramento, I would go to this one bookstore, and I could literally sit there and read every book in that store. I could spend 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be going through the sports section, and I saw this book with my father-in-law's picture on it.
All right.
On the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw my husband at his office, and I said, Larry, knowing that my husband My father-in-law was an only child. My mother-in-law was an only child, and my husband was an only child. Mm-hmm. So I asked my husband, I said, did you know that some author did a book on your father? And he says, Dolores, you've got to be kidding. And I said, Larry, I swear the picture of your father is on the cover of this book. Well, at that time, you know, we didn't have these kind of cell phones where you
Absolutely.
Could take it. So my husband right. said, my husband said, would you just buy every book she had? Carol had 50 in the bookstore. I bought them all.
Yeah.
My husband was a very smart person. My husband never told me, Dota Fauntleroy, that his father could not write, could not spell his name. You know, I didn't know that he used an X for his signature. So when I brought the books home to my husband, he still didn't tell me. The next day I heard him in his office calling the publishing company, asking them questions. My mother-in-law and my husband would be 95 to this day. My mother-in-law kept every report card of my husband, a picture of every of his from first grade on up. And the report cards were signed by his mother, and his father just made an X on it.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband sued the publisher. My husband sued the publisher, but he didn't tell me. We were in court, and my husband just sat there with our attorney very patiently, and he asked the author of this book. In fact, Bill and I talked about it last night. His name was John Holloway. And the judge asked Mr. Holloway, he said, how did you get permission to write this book on Larry Brown? And he said, well, here's the contract. Larry Brown signed it. My husband said, Your Honor, may I see a copy of that contract? And the judge said, yes. And my husband said, sir, and he showed him all his report cards through high school and through college. He said, that's my father's signature. Wouldn't you agree that they're not the same? So the judge asked Mr. Holloway, how many of those books had he sold? How much were they? How many were out in print? And he owed every dime to my husband.
Amen.
And the judge said, you will never print another one of these books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One of my great experiences in the military was that while I was waiting to be put in a class to fly,
right.
I had several jobs. One of them was in the library, and they had me teach a sergeant how to write.
See?
That here I am, a high school dropout, remember, teaching a sergeant how to write his name instead of putting an X on payday.
A lot of them did not.
Yeah. When you told the story just now, it reminded me that was one of the experiences I had just before I went into training, 45I, class 45I. Was to teach a sergeant how to sign his name.
And just think, if he's alive today, he's still signing his name to you.
Well, that's an awesome responsibility for a kid, because I was just, like I said, I was...
But you rose to the occasion. You did it.
Right.
Yes, he did. We have someone with their hand up that they want to ask a question or give y'all a comment. Are y'all ready to take a call? Area code 626. Area code 626.
Sorry about that. I stuck myself on mute. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you and you.
Okay. Well, what we want to ask, I want to ask, two things. What's going on with Black Detroit? And also, what's the future of Black Detroit? Because as we know of, if you go to major cities, Black people are being displaced, meaning that there's a lot of gentrification going on in major cities that was once the population of Blacks was very high. Detroit, Chicago, Los Angeles, Oakland,
D.C.
San Francisco, yeah, D.C., San Francisco, there are no more Black people in San Francisco as far as community. There are no more Black, you know, they totally done totally dissolve Blackness in Detroit, I mean, in San Francisco. So I want to know, because I do know people from the Detroit. I know them, and they tell me that the future of Detroit looks very bleak for Black people. So I want to know what's going on with Detroit from that perspective.
Oh, well I can. That sounds...
Okay, I didn't quite understand. So the people of Detroit are what?
I think he's speaking of basically like a gentrification.
You wrote it.
They're getting what?
Huh?
Gentrified.
Yes, they're doing it everywhere. But
yeah, it was all over the United States.
They're doing it everywhere, but, honey, I really don't know. Since I've been back here, I was living in Israel, and I came back to America, and I was in Los Angeles. I got hit. And since I've been back in Detroit, as a matter of fact, I think I got hit by that shuttle van because I was on my way back to Israel. When I passed through Detroit, I didn't recognize anybody, and those that I knew, I didn't recognize, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's like the people are zombies or something. I don't know what's going on here, but I don't like it, whatever it is. And that's one of the reasons that I'm dealing with internet. But I really have not gotten involved in the political situation. And I'm doing more here with dry bones than I've been doing anywhere. But the fact that, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wilmington, Delaware.
No, you calling from Delaware, okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm not the one that can really explain that. Today is Martha Reeves' birthday, and she was on city council, and I was hoping. It's my fault because I didn't reach her. She was coming back today from Alabama. She performed for the Special Olympics, and she is due back today. But I wasn't able to reach her before that, and so I made where I came from. But I don't know, darling, but if you get any information, help me too.
Yeah, let me ask you a question then. You're from where? Well, you were saying that you lived in Israel for a while?
Yes, I was in Israel for about 3 years.
Okay. Were you among the Hebrew Israelites there?
Yes, I was.
Okay, yeah. No, because I'm funny that you said that. When you said that sparked me a little, because I had met Benjamin Israel. I met that guy years ago.
Did you? I understand that he passed. He passed, but I keep hearing that you're reaching out to me, so I'm trying to reach back. But I haven't made contact yet. But Prince Asiel, as a matter of fact, Brother Ray is the one that told me Prince Asiel was looking for me. He was the second in charge under Benjamin. So he's still with the nation, you know. So I really haven't talked to anyone other than the fact that I heard that the first is reaching out for me.
Wait a minute. Let me rephrase what I just said here. I met not Benjamin, but I met Ben Asiel some years ago. Not Benjamin.
Oh,
I
so
met
you met Prince Asiel. Okay. All right.
He was actually a nice guy. Matter of fact, he gave me a number to call him. This was years ago. This was during the 90s, late 90s. He gave me a number to call him. I called him, and somebody else picked up. And he said a question about who do you want to speak to. I said, I want to speak to Ben Asiel. He gave me this number because I was trying to get him on his show to speak. And nothing never transformed about it because I guess he was always busy or something, whatever. But I've been knowing about the Hebrew Israelites for a long time. And I know some of their history. I know when they got there in between 68 and 69, and they've been there ever since. But I do know, I heard a disturbing article about them, that the Israeli government was trying to make them leave, or trying to tell them that they were no longer welcome there. And
they have their citizenship now.
Okay, they do. Okay.
They have their citizenship.
Okay, good. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
But they went through a lot to get it.
But
I don't care what nobody say. Blacks in America are special, okay? And
right,
I say God be to glory for all good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And what they went through, it was 30 years before they got their citizenship. And what they went through is that the state of Israel said that they couldn't work. As a matter of fact, I don't think people really realize some of the stuff that they went through. When they got to Israel and they saw how many black people there was, they told them that they had changed the law. They did change the law about anybody coming there could be an Israelite. But when they saw them, what they said was that you had to be born by a Jewish woman
to
qualify to be a Jew, right? You know, when they got to Israel, they told them that they had to go back. But Benjamin had them to burn their passport so they couldn't send them nowhere. So they said, if you ain't got no passport, you ain't got no visa, if we catch you working, catch you doing anything, we're putting you in jail. And that's what they went through for 30 years.
And this is the thing. We'll have to, you know, the point was, and I'm with him on this, that, no, that's our land. I mean, that's us. So we don't have to do nothing, truthfully. So I remember years ago, Bev Johnson did a video on the black Palestinians there. She did a whole documentary on the black Palestinian front. And it wasn't called the black Palestinian front, but they were called the Afro-Palestinian front. And those brothers were there. And those brothers were saying, no, they said, we've been here before Moses got here, period. So she was like, really? And the guy said, yeah, we've been here for most of the people. He said,
somebody in your paper.
Yeah, we got this background noise. Thank you, Ms.
Okay.
Stone.
All right, go ahead, darling.
Yeah, so it's refreshing to hear that they finally got their citizenship taken care of. I was saddened to hear that the brother had passed some years ago. I was saddened of that because I think that was so soon for him, because he did a great work and he did a great mighty, and he took a great mighty walk, because that took a lot of courage for them to do what they did, just to give up and go over there and say, this is ours and we ain't going nowhere. So that should really be amended with Benjamin imprint. Plus, you know, and as well with the prince as well, that they really laid their lives down for that particular cause, and I don't think they get enough respect, truthfully.
No, because people don't know. You can't give respect
to
something you don't know nothing about. That's the purpose of me talking about our daughters, about our. My red tail agents.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the problem, because people don't know. We don't give it, but you see, if we gave honor, then people would know. If we give honor to what honor is due, that's why I'm sure Tuskegee Airways changed the world. But maybe it wasn't just for America. But they were not doing that for the world, I don't believe. They were doing it for their people. They were doing it for us. So let our country know that we're qualified to do any and everything that anybody else can do. You know?
Right.
But you see, that's what most people don't realize, is that the people that would even have a thought, like any other human being, is lesser than them. That means that they're deceived by the enemy. You know?
Right.
They're already deceived. So we got a problem. because they're already deceived. Anybody that thinks that they're better than anybody else, my mama told me,
right,
you ain't better than nobody else, but baby, ain't nobody better than you. You know?
Right.
And that's how I've been in my life. So I don't kiss nobody's behind and don't ask nobody to kiss mine. You do.
Yeah.
You
and that's the thing. We've been calling ourselves black Jews for a long time. You know, we've been calling ourselves black Jews since the 1920s, and people don't even know that. You know, back in Harlem, they had the Black Jews of Harlem. There's a book that is out of print now, but it's called The Black Jews of Harlem. And it talks about the first brothers who came with this teaching and with this reality. And brother by the name of Rabbi Hosea Arnold from the Caribbean. He met up with a brother here by the name of Matthew Woodworth. These brothers were the first of the black Hebrews. Matter of fact, Matthew Woodworth was told he couldn't be a Jew because they wouldn't accept him as a rabbi because he was black. It's actually a very good book. I always recommend people to get this book if you can get it. It might be out of print now, but I found out the old copy of it. It's an old hardback copy I got. I got blessed to have that. I guess the Most High wanted me to have that. But those brothers kind of laid the groundwork for a lot of this, and people don't even know who they are. You know, these brothers are all dead. Now, this was during the 1920s and 30s in Harlem, where you had black synagogues all over the place. And people don't even know that these brothers had this going on at that particular time.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like but that's what we be talking about all the time, that it's our responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's our responsibility to tell our own story. And what we don't, what most people don't realize, if you don't tell your story, it ain't going to be told right.
Right.
That's why I appreciate Ms. Brown, and I appreciate Dr. Fontoy being here to make sure whatever we say, they keep us straight.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, and they'll keep
us straight. That's what the battle of dry bones is about.
Yes, it is. I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to play one of your songs with Marvin Gaye. Baby,
all
I
right.
Need Your Lovin'. Okay, yo, this is Kim Weston and Marvin Gaye.
Thank you.
When you see me smiling, babe, I need you, babe.
gotten worse, babe. Any smile that you might see has all been rehearsed, babe.
I need you, babe.
Darling, can't go on without you.
Oh, babe.
This emptiness won't let me live without
you.
That was just beautiful. You and Marvin Gaye just seemed like y'all were just made to sing together.
Yeah.
Y'all's voices just blended together.
And you know what, after that? I really didn't like that. Tonight's the best. I enjoyed that more tonight than I've ever enjoyed it. I never liked it.
You never liked it?
No. Well, you know, I was there when the Four Tops did it, so... I mean, I didn't think we did justice to it, but putting it with the context of the show, it did something else to me. You know,
Miss Weston?
Yes.
What year was it that you and Marvin did?
I have no idea. In the 60s. That's the best I can say.
What's wrong with that answer?
And I'm sorry, unfortunately, kind of I don't know. It was in the 60s,
though. But it was in the 60s, darling, that's all that I can say.
Okay.
Yeah.
When they went to high school together, he and my brother Raymond went to high school together, and they won a week's contract at the Howard Theater in high school.
Wow. Marvin Gaye, former Congressman Walter Fauntleroy.
Yeah, no, Raymond. He was with Raymond.
Oh, Raymond, that's right.
Miss Kim. Remember, he said, Hammond, wait, now. Oh, my. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Billy Stewart and
Pardon
Ray. You talking about the people that Brother Ray worked with, went to school with?
That they would sing on the corner. Remember he's talking about how they,
Van McCoy. Yeah, Van McCoy, And Billy Stewart and there's somebody else he talked about all the time. Where Brother Ray at?
He's here in Washington area, visiting his children here in Washington.
He's doing better.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I talked to him today. He was on his way to a doctor's appointment. So.
Okay.
We have another call. I'm going to bring them in, y'all. Area code 706.
Well, greetings,
Brother Kwame.
Well,
yeah, I was going to call you.
I felt it in my, I felt it through all of this energy. I said, uh-oh, Miss Kim's looking for me.
That's right. Where you
at?
Yeah,
I just called Bev up there in Detroit and told her that you was on because Dry Bones, I know he made the announcement Sunday on the show.
He did.
Right, and so I was trying to remember, and I said, today is 7th to 18th, and yeah, it's on, but I'm here. And greeting to the elder. Is that Brother Ray's brother?
Yes.
Yes.
Miss Brown, love you, Brother Carmen. She said, you and Brother Billy, of all the people that I put on her, she said she really enjoyed it. She enjoyed you all the most.
Well, I'm grateful. It's an honor to be able to still communicate and to communicate with the Fauntleroys because these are historical, actual historical people that we can talk to and don't read in a book about black history. We're talking to black history.
Yeah.
These are the parts that's honorable to know, because I know I came up in a time, because I'm just a young elder. I'm just 72. And I remember Dr. King, Malcolm, you know, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even seeing President Kennedy. But seeing all of these histories, and now we're looking at, our children are studying that, my grandchildren are studying about these people that we saw and were with in our lifetime, is something that we have to begin to reverence and honor. Because I just came back from my mom's 90th birthday, and that was to see five generations from her to my great-grandchildren. Seeing five generations all in the backyard, all there honoring that one person.
Yes.
You know, we've got to bring this back, because the OJs did the song Family Reunion. That's a very important part of how we stay connected.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Let me add something that I don't think you may know, but today, Mary McLeod Bethune's statue was put in the United States Capitol to replace one of those
Confederate, yes,
Confederate statues. And as a little boy, I used to go to the store for her, because she lived in the at the corner of the street that I lived on. And I made it a point to be available when she would come to the door and say, "Little boy, can you go to the store for me?" And I'd run to the store, because she'd always give me a nickel.
Wow. But, you know,
and that was a lot of money back then.
Oh, my. I bought candy for the week.
And those are memories that actually we're talking to a person that knew her, that statue that's being put there. 160 years ago, 2 days ago, 160 years ago, 2 days ago, on July 16th, Ida B. Wells Barnett was born.
Yep.
In 1862.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And these are the parts that we're looking at. It's not just 150 years ago, and all that she did, same thing that Mary McLeod Bethune, and we're talking about, you have a college there in Florida, and she made this with bean pies and selling dinners.
Right.
Yeah.
And here we are making millions of dollars and then can't get a hospital for us.
Is that amazing?
Right. Yeah.
May I say something?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to kind of add on with what he was saying, if he doesn't mind. So I wanted to say that there was a movie that came out about 3 years ago called Detroit, 1967, I believe that was the thing.
I hate it.
And it was, they were chronicling the riots of Detroit, but the story was really about the Dramatics. And the founder of the group, I think his last name was Reed. I forgot his first name. Was it William Reed? I'm not sure if it was Wayne Reed, but I do know his last name was Reed, and he was the founder of that group. And, of course, as y'all know, if you grew up in Detroit, some of you elders might know the story that they were supposed to sing, and what happened was the riot had broke out, and Donna Ross, I think, was on stage, but they had to cut it short, so the Dramatics, that they had to leave. So they all got mixed up in the riot and went different places. of course, as the movie goes, which I didn't understand, and I thought that black people in Jerome had slept on this movie, that brother got wrapped up in that stuff that happened at the hotel where cops beat them people down. I mean, the cops literally beat them down. Matter of fact, they killed some of them. And the founder of the group got caught up in that. And so that's why he never saw with the Dramatics, because he told them that he could no longer sing in front of a crowd anymore because of what happened to him. And that's when the other gentleman became part of the group. But I thought that was a very interesting story about that particular group and the founder of that group and how he got caught up in that stuff. And I'm kind of, well, they killed his bodyguard, the guy that was with him, but they beat him senseless. And they beat some other young men at their senseless as well inside this hotel. Matter of fact, is that hotel still there? It's still, no, I think it was called the Ringo Hotel, something like that. Is that hotel still there?
I really don't know, darling. A Rio Grande, yeah. I'm not sure. But I'm not sure. I think it was on Linwood, but I'm not sure. I doubt it very seriously.
Yeah.
Linwood looks like the desert.
I thank what's his name?
Oh,
my name?
No. Yes, here was.
No, but I was. Go ahead. I was trying to find out his name, but he made a very excellent point.
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And he made an excellent point because he's talking about the Dramatics and how all of that went down in Detroit. And it's that name. That Dramatic situation created the Dramatics. You see how things mm-hmm. coincide, just like the Greenwood, Ashby, and Pine. It's streets in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the Gap Band was raised at to form the band.
Right.
That's how they gave
mm-hmm.
the name Gap Band.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so
and
looking at certain things, the Temptation was the Elgin. They made the movie, and they
well,
were
the
so attracted
went to Elgin.
They said that they
Cronin.
Were so tempted.
Brother Cronin.
Yes.
Did you say the Temptations were the Elgin?
No, they had, that's what they, in the movie,
that's
what they first
was.
Yes.
No,
that
was not
the
original
name. They said the Elgin for the watch.
Right.
That's at the end when they told them to choose another name, they chose to be they were tempted to be successful.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't like the movie, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but that was a great movie, and I thought that black people slept on that movie, man. And when I saw that movie, it blew my mind. I said, wow.
It
was right, and I said that. I said, that's who that's about. It's the Dramatics. So because when the movie was ending, and when Reed said he could no longer sing with him, the other gentleman jumped in, and he started singing. He jumped in his place, and they said, can you sing? He said, yeah. He said, watch me. So he was standing there. He said, okay, go on stage with him. So they started singing, and they sang the song as the movie was going off. They sang, what you see is what you get. You know what I'm saying? So they were singing that, and when Reed was looking, and he smiled, and he walked away, and they said that he never came back to the Dramatics. Now, here's the guy that was the founder of the group. He said he never came back. Now, they still know him. I think he's still living, too. They said that he never came back to the Dramatics. They still friends with him, but they said he never came back to the Dramatics. They said them white folks devastated him, and he was never the same after that. He said he could never perform in front of white people again. He said he could never do it.
Ms. Kim, did you know him? Now, were you with him when that happened?
No, I left with him. That was 67, but I knew the Dramatics.
One of them just passed away. One of the Dramatics just passed away, I think, about two or three months ago. One of them just passed.
Right.
the one that had the voice. He had that voice. That he sounded like that. So he passed on.
Right. But what Willie Ford,
who was the bassist that he passed last year, remember what?
Say it again, we can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I said Willie Ford that passed about a year ago. He was the bassist that was at it, too, so that's what I knew.
Yeah. Yeah. When I see those groups now today on YouTube video, it just hurts. It doesn't hurt my heart, but I just say, wow. Just looking at the Sprinter sing, I'd be like, what? I say, really? Look at the Sprinter sing. I mean, they were just the Sprinter, so smooth, so in tune. I mean, it's like you look at them and you see perfection on stage. It's like, it's like, wow. You know?
Yeah.
That would be a great movie to see. The Spinners. That would be a great movie to see because when they were at Motown, Henry Farmer, he told everybody, he said, we were at Motown and Barry wouldn't give us anything. So we left. So he said the song that they were supposed to give some of to us, they gave them to the Pets. But we said, wait a minute, hold on. Hey, Barry was the problem. So Henry said that's what made them leave. And keep in mind that the history of the Sprinters were, he said that Motel wasn't the first label they signed with. It was a label before that the Sprinters were on. But they went to Motel after that label. And they said they went to Motel, but when they got there, they had no work. But he said, thank God to Stevie Wonder, when he wrote the song, It's a Shame, he said, bam. He said, then people said, wait a minute. Did these guys were at Motel? What? And so everybody was shocked. They said, yeah, he was at Motel. So this is when Tom Bell jumped in. He said, I want them right there. And that's when they went to Philly, and they had the Philly sound. And after that, the Sprinters blew up. But they never looked back. So that's that would be a great movie, too, to do about the Sprinter, because I would like to know what was their position during that time, during the civil rights era. What was their position as musicians at that time? I'm sure they all had a position that they took and what was going on with black people. I'm sure all of them had a position on
Motown that. Motown would not get into politics at all. That's why when Marvin did What's Going On, he didn't have a release for a couple of years. I was gone. This is what he told me. Mm-hmm. But he said that in order for him to get a release, he had a tax problem. And Barry told him that since he believed in that song, so rather than to loan him the money, he'd release the song. And that's how was going on that. But Motown would not get into politics. If a song was written that dealt with politics, it would not get released.
And that was the reason why they gave you such a headache when you did Lift Every Voice.
No. I wasn't with Motown. No. I left.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons I left.
But what you shared, Ms. Kim, with you having the connection with Marvin and his family, and knowing his brother who came home from Vietnam. And ask Marvin what's
going on.
And
right, he's a manager. Yeah. Right. Is that what's really happening? What we're reading, man? What we're hearing about? Is that really what's going on? But in the meantime, Obi Benson of the Four Tops, who incidentally, Abdul Faker Duke, who's the last original member of the Four Tops, has written a book, and he's working on a musical right now. That's what I was telling you. And connected Paul Rice is doing the music. Miss Brown, that's the music that's the music that Paul is working on now, the music for Duke Space.
That's great.
And that is,
isn't
it? Yeah.
And that's a scoop, y'all.
And see, what we're having.
I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
No, what I was sharing with is Miss Kim is giving authenticity to truth that she lived and see what went on. There, people are writing and picking up bits and pieces, but we need the authenticity what she brings to be able to tell truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
And when I got
to the hotel,
go ahead.
You know, recently I heard, did you know Smokey very well?
Hey, what?
I said, did you know Smokey Robinson very well?
Yes.
Okay. You know, recently, and I wish one day I could actually talk to him in person to tell him this, but it probably never happened. But I was, he was on The View, and people really was talking about him after he made the statement, when he was on The View, and he was saying that he was an American. And I mean, that's fine. You know, he was American.
He doesn't want to be called African-American.
American, right. And I get that, you know, I mean, and I get that because of his generation, et cetera, to a point. But I also get the fact that, well, Smokey, I mean, because he made a statement about Timbuktu and all that. I'm like, but my thought process was, but Smokey, that was part of our history, period. You know, so you can't just overlook that. And it's what I thought when he made those statements. I was kind of disappointed in him that he would do that.
Could I ask you a question?
I was very disappointed about when I heard him say that. Very disappointed.
Yeah, but could I ask a question? How many people do you know from the continent?
Who, me?
From the what?
Yeah,
from Africa.
A lot of them. How, you know, Nigerians, Ghanaians, Ethiopians? Is that
what
they
know?
The people don't even call themselves African. They call themselves what nation they come from.
We have to start utilizing
a superiority name and saying that they gave this and saying that we're African American, we're this or we're that. We don't know our origin, where we came from in lineage through our ancestry. All of the people that come off of that continent identify with a nation. You define the people by land, history, and culture. That land in which those people are born on, they're born in Nigeria, they're born in Ghana, they're born in Ethiopia, South Africa. All of these places were what was changed in the Berlin Conference was Europeans colonizing and taking something, and they're still taking. We are taking on identity that they've given us because for most Europeans that come around, I'm an Italian, I'm a French, I'm Swedish. They tell you what country. They don't tell you they white people, or they they're European or Caucasian.
Well,
they tell you what the country, the nation that they come from.
Yeah, but let me say this. We get that, but that's not what Smokey was talking about. Okay. Smokey just totally disrupted and down the ideal, period. And I was like, whoa, Smokey, you know, and I understand that that's his perception and that's his point of view. But he needs to understand, as an entertainer and as a pioneer in black music, he needs to understand when he says those type of things, he needs to understand that his people, they don't all feel like him. They don't all say the same viewpoint as him. So he needs to be more neutral on how he dealt with that particular comment that he made on The View, which was really not a good view for him. Because people are like,
I have something. I want listen to this, okay? This is how Smokey Robinson.
Okay. You remind me, I love you.
I love being black. I love being called black. I love being an American. I love being a black American. But as a black man in this country, I think it's a shame that every few years we get a change of name. Since those first ships arrived here from Africa that came across the sea, there were already black men in this country who were free. And as for those who came over on those terrible boats, they were called nigger and slave and told what to do and how to behave. And then Master started tripping, doing his midnight tipping down to the slave shacks where he forced he and great-great-grandma to be together. And the great-great-grandpa protested, he got tired and feathered. And at the same time, the black men in the country who were free were mating with the tribes like the Apache and the Cherokee. And as a result of all that, we're a parade of every shade. And in this late day and age, you can be sure there ain't too many of us in this country whose bloodline is pure. But according to a geological geographical genealogy study published in Time magazine, the black African people were the first on the scene. So for what it's worth, the black African people were the first on Earth, and through migration, our characteristics started to change and rearrange to adapt to whatever climate we migrated to. And that's how I became me, and you became you. So if we're going to go back, let's go all the way back. And if Adam was black and Eve was black, then that kind of makes it a natural fact that everybody in America is an African American. Everybody in Europe is an African European. Everybody in the Orient is an African Asian, and so on and so on. That is, if the origin of man is what we're going to go on. And if one drop of black blood makes you black like they say, then everybody's black anyway. So quit trying to change my identity. I'm already who I was meant to be. I'm a black American born and raised. And Brother James Brown wrote a wonderful phrase. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Because I'm proud to be black. And I ain't never lived in Africa. And because my great-great-granddaddy on my daddy's side did, don't mean I want to go back. Now, I have nothing against Africa. It's where some of the most beautiful places and people in the world are found. But I've been blessed to go a lot of places in this world. And if you ask me where I choose to live, I pick America, hands down. Now, by and by, we were called Negroes. And after a while, that name was banished. Anyway, Negro is just how you say black in Spanish. Then we were called colored. But shit, everybody's one color or another, and I think it's a shame that we hold that against each other. And it seems like we reverted back to a time when being called black was an insult, even if it was another black man who said that a fight would result, because we've been so brainwashed that black was wrong till even the yellow niggas and the black niggas couldn't get along. But then came the 1960s. When we struggled and died to be called equal in black, and we walked with pride with our heads held high and our shoulders pushed back, and black was beautiful. But I guess that wasn't good enough, because now here they come with some other stuff. Who comes up with this shit anyway? Was it one or a group of niggas just sitting around one day? Feeling a little insecure again about being called black and decided that African-American sounded a little more exotic. Well, I think you were being a little more neurotic. It's that same mentality that got Amos and Andy put off the air because they were embarrassed about the way the characters spoke. And as a result of that action, a lot of wonderful black actors ended up broke when we were just laughing and having fun about ourselves. So I say, fuck you if you can't take a joke. You didn't see the Beverly Hillbillies being protested by white folks. And if you think, that of course you think, that being called African American sets all black people's minds at ease, since we affectionately call each other nigger, I affectionately say to you, nigger, please. I didn't get a chance to vote on who I'd like to be. Who gave you the right to make that decision for me? I ain't under your rule or in your dominion, and I'm entitled to my own opinion. Now, there are some African Americans here, but they recently moved here from places like Kenya, Ethiopia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Zaire. But not a brother whose family's lived in this country for generations, occupying space in all the locations, New York, Miami, L.A., Detroit, Chicago, even if he's wearing a dashiki and sporting an afro. And if you go to Africa in search of your race, you'll find out quick you're not an African American. You're just a black American in Africa taking up space. Why you keep trying to attach yourself to a continent where even if you got the chance to go and you went, most people there wouldn't even claim you as one of them, as a purebred daughter or son of them. Your heritage is right here now, no matter what you call yourself or what you say. And a lot of people died to make it that way. And if you think America's the leader on inequality and suffering and grieving, how come there's so many people coming and so few leaving? Rather than all this fine thought with America shit you promoting, if you want to change something, use your privilege. Get to the polls. Come and support them. God knows we've earned the right to be called American Americans and be free at last. And rather than you moving forward with progress, you're dwelling in the past. We struggled too long. We've come too far. And to the folks that know who we were, let's be proud of who we are. We're the only people whose name is always a trend. When is this shit going to end? Look at all the different colors of our skin. Black is not our color. It's our core. It's what we've been living and fighting and dying for. But if you choose to be called African American and that's your preference, then I give you that reference. But I know on this issue I don't stand alone on my own. And if I do, then let me be me. And I'd appreciate it if when you see me, you say, there goes a man who says it loud. I'm black. I'm black. I'm a black American, and I'm proud because I love being an American. And I love being black. I love being called black. Yeah, I said it, and I don't take it back.
Okay, yes, it was, so there was Smokey Robinson in his own words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I get what he's saying. You know, and then he goes into this thing with this new thing now where everybody's saying blacks were already here before slavery and all that stuff. I mean, I get that, okay? I get that. I per se don't always go to that as a premise to describe always us. I think that like the sister said earlier, that we're special people, and we're special, so we shouldn't just call ourselves black. As far as I'm concerned, that to me don't mean nothing. White folks say they don't call themselves just white. They don't. Go inside their homes, and they will tell you what they are. They say, I'm Irish. I'm Italian.
But
exactly.
That's what
I know that, but let me finish my point. So I'm saying that that's why I'm coming from Smokey. Now, when he was on The View, he didn't say it that way. He totally just, like, threw a punch at the people who do classify themselves as African-American or, you know, someone who's African, who's an Americanized African who live in America. So he, in fact, kind of like threw a punch. And that's why people was kind of like, whoa, Smokey, like, you know, relax. So just like he makes the notion that there were blacks over here, some blacks don't even cotton to that. They don't agree with that because that takes away, in some cases, for some African Americans, that takes away the fact that, well, the idea of them coming here and being stolen out of Africa, that takes away from that. So they don't want that to be taken away. They want people to understand that this happened to us, period. And I'm sure his ancestor would tell, and Smokey should know this, because he contradicts himself on one hand. He says it, but then he goes back and says, well, I'm just black. Well, your ancestors that came here, Smokey, wasn't just black, bro. They came out of Africa.
But what did he just say in that, the part that they did scientific proof that the human on Mother Earth comes from one place on the planet, and the DNA, it comes from a Dwat woman and the Sanskrit people in South Africa, the pygmy. And she is the mother who carries the mitochondria DNA of all humankind. So like he said, everybody on the planet has a drop of us in them. The part that we're doing is that you're taking one piece that this brother has contributed to what, 100 things over, and you take one piece, and you take that one piece, and you point that's where we have our charge of hurting each other. Because she just played the part in what he told who he is. Malcolm said, dogs and slaves are named by their masters. Real men named themselves. That man named himself.
Well, like I go by the words of the great John Henry Clark. And one thing he made clear before he died,
Well, I just want to share something. You're going someplace.
Okay.
I carry Dr. Clark's casket to the grave in Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, listen to what I'm saying, bro. Well, then,
okay, wait a minute. Let Brother Kwame finish, and then you can go.
I thought he was finished.
No, he's not done yet. Give me a moment, please. Okay, Brother Kwame.
Dr. John Henry Clark was my teacher. So if you're getting ready to tell me something about that Dr. Clark that I don't already know, or if you want to share something, because that's where I got the phrase, you define the people by land, history, and culture, was Dr. Clark's words.
Okay, you finished?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me
say that's fine.
Excuse me. I appreciate where you all going, but this day is dedicated to my daughters, okay?
Right.
I'm talking about the documented, original Tuskegee Airmen who made it possible for us to even be here to discuss this. So I appreciate that, but I want to go back to where this was originated from. It's originated from the people that sacrificed their lives for us to even be able to talk, to even be on this radio show right now, for us to share.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I want to talk about. I want to talk about them. I want to talk about the convention that's coming up. I want Brother Billy to share with us what he's been through and what he suggests for us to do in this time. That's what the purpose is.
My apologies, Ms. Kim and Brother and Elder Billy Fauntleroy, I apologize, but there's some things, you know, that we have to get straight, and I apologize. I got too emotional.
I appreciate that.
And I bring it back to where
you.
It's at.
Yeah, I appreciate it. What's your name, brother, from Delaware?
Brother Yeshua.
Okay. I appreciate you calling in, and that the what you're talking about is definitely relevant, because that's preceding the donor. You know, but that's what I want. I want to celebrate. I want to celebrate the people that sacrificed their lives for us to even be able to do what we're doing right now. Okay.
And
you
also
know about,
you as well, Ms. Kim.
I know, but it's dedicated to the donors. Because you see,
yes, ma'am.
Mary Young was a Tuskegee Airman. I didn't even know
yes.
that. Him reporting July 18th is Kim Weston Day. I had no idea what that was relevant to as far as the Tuskegee. God put all of this on me, like Marvin Frankie said, what's going on? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I appreciate that, and what you're saying is definitely relevant and something that we need to deal with. But today I'd like for us to deal with our daughters, okay, and the things that they did so that we can appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? The mutiny, the Freedom Mutiny. How many people know about that? People don't know. Then, and that was in Indiana. That wasn't overseas. That was after they had been through all they had been through, you know, sacrificing their lives. And when they came back to America after World War II, when they walked down the plank, when they walked down the thing or whatever you call it to come home, they had two signs up there. One telling white folks to go one way and one telling black people to go another way. After sacrificing their lives, they still didn't want to give them the respect. That's what I want to deal with, because we still are not getting the respect today.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. That is so true, Ms. Kim.
I was telling Antoinette. I don't know where she finds these songs from. And I told you that was one of my least favorite songs as far as Marvin and I are concerned. But what I'm concerned about is something that's born free right now. I was born free. This is my country. I think I told you all before, I was on the Merv Griffin show, and I did Exodus in rehearsal. And this Jewish woman got mad because I was singing Exodus. And she ran out of, when her turn was, she ran all out in the audience and ate up my time. So I wasn't able to sing that. But that's what I want to hear. I want to hear about stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? What do we do? If we come together, that's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about us coming together. Because until we come together, and everything else is relevant. Because we can't do nothing. One person standing up ain't going to mean nothing. We've got to come together. We've got to come together with unification on one accord.
That's true. Yes. That is true. Miss Kim, I have Exodus up. Would you like for me to play that now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand,
okay, y'all, that was Miss Kim Weston and Exodus. Well, the song is called Exodus.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, darling. Ms. Brown?
You're welcome, Miss Kim.
Ms. Brown, you still there? She hasn't cut off, but maybe she walked away.
Yeah.
Okay, Brother Ben, Brother Kwame, y'all
together. I'm here, Kim.
Okay, all right, okay.
I'm
still
here.
I see you probably stepped away. So you were
there.
Okay.
No, I'm here.
Good.
Okay.
Good. Go ahead, Ms. Kim.
I was going to ask Ms. Brown to say something about the convention for me. Ms. Brown is on the board. Is on the board of directors for the Tuskegee Airmen. I want everyone to know.
Yes, National Convention. Is going to be in San Antonio, Texas this year, and it's going to be September 15th, 16th, and 17th. And we're looking forward to a great turnout. And our main objective is to just honor our donors and the surviving spouses of the donors.
That's good.
And look, you know, so Ms. Brown and I were talking, and she was saying, this is a part of what I'm talking about as far as you're concerned. We don't do anything for each other unless there's a charge. I understand that. But we've got to give back. Do you know most of the people that dedicate money to help the Tuskegee one, they're not black.
No, ma'am.
Black people don't make contributions, stuff like this. All the money that people are making are called me what the donors. When you think about all these rap people that's got all this money and all that bling and stuff, all that stuff, they ain't doing nothing. They ain't doing, what are they doing to give back to the people that helped them to get that bling?
Yeah, and I mean, it's very expensive for a donor like Donor Fauntleroy to buy an airplane ticket to come to San Antonio to pay for his hotel room for 3 days, to pay for all his meals, to pay for registration. And we have finally said, donors have done that in the past, traditionally at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
But we have said, that's enough. We are not. And as I said, we are including the widows. They're not going to pay for anything. It's time for us to honor these people and not look for them to pay for anything. And I'm sorry it took so long for us to get there, but I'm thankful to God that we are finally there.
Ms. Brown,
go ahead, Brother Fauntleroy.
We held the convention here in Washington, D.C. in 2011. And one of the things that we tried to do, my brother Walter was in Congress then, and he put together a presentation to our chapter that all donors, in the members of Congress who had a donor in their area, that they would send them to the conventions.
Right.
That was an idea. It was never fulfilled, but it sounds like what you guys are doing now is going to do that. Of course,
yes.
There are fewer donors than there were in 2011. But
correct.
But to get them together again, and I hope I'm available to do it.
I'm claiming in the Lord, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost that you're going to be there with me.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But the song says, "Beg, steal, or borrow." I'm not going to steal, but I'm going to beg or borrow to get there on my own.
And
thank you.
No, we don't want you to do any of that. We're not expecting anything from any donor or any widow. No.
Right.
It's our time to show them how much we love, respect them, and appreciate them.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's Jerry Burke's focus. For the first time, we have a good president of this organization that recognizes the contributions that the Tuskegee Airmen donors paid to this country, and he's finally said, we're not taking a cent from a donor or a widow. We will take care of everything.
Well, when I see Jerry, I'm not gonna hug and kiss him. But I'm going to shake his hand.
Because there you go.
A special kind of person to me because we've done a lot of things together. because he took a liking to this little fella. And like I was telling Kim, they're in the library in University of California in Berkeley. There's a picture of Jerry, my wife, and me, and we're in our right red jackets together. He has been one of the stars, as far as I'm concerned, with the Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated.
I agree with this.
Jerry has won the award from Noel Parrish and his wife.
He has.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and those are things that it's kind of difficult in our organization, even where there's so much respect from each other. It's difficult to do things. And he has been just, in my opinion, that's why he's the president now, because he has been outstanding as a member of the Tuskegee Airmen.
And I will tell you something else, Dota Fauntleroy, that shocked me at our meeting last Thursday when Jerry Burton and Miss Weston, Miss Marianne, was telling the board about the convention and what our plans were for the DOTAs,
mm-hmm,
and the surviving spouses. And on the board of directors, there's a large majority of DOTA's children on that board.
Mm-hmm.
And what I will say is they all raised their hands and said that they would sponsor a DOTA.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
And I thought that was so nice of them.
Right.
All of their fathers are deceased. And they said, they told Jerry, we want to sponsor a DOTA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elder Fauntleroy.
I have a special place in my heart for Jerry Burton. Since I've met him, we've done a lot of things together. We have seemed to have the same interests. My son and his daughter and I were going to see the black violinist. And I was in a wheelchair, and I rolled in. They rolled me into the theater, and who should come down from out of the audience but Jerry Burton.
Uh-huh.
See how things happen, and so. Those are the kind of things that, like I said, those men, like I'm older than Jerry, of course, but the way he takes care of us is the way they took care of me. I'll put it that way. Thank you. Thank you. And Ms. Kim, let me say this. I congratulate you on Kim Weston Day today. I've learned a lot from you, and I'm so happy that I am a friend of Kim Weston.
Amen.
And I'm sure anybody else is going to say the same thing.
Amen.
Yes. Yes.
Likewise. But
I've learned so much. I've learned so much from all of you, even the young man that first time I heard it tonight. And, of course, Brother Kwame, you know I love you because he's walking library, encyclopedia, or whatever.
Yes, yes.
Could I ask Elder Fauntleroy, when you were at the museum, African American Museum, remember when you were there in line with the wheelchair?
Yeah.
And a young lady came up and told you that you shouldn't be sitting here, and she pushed you up to the front of the line?
Yeah.
That was my
My memory of that day was when they.
She still has the picture she took with you of that day when she took you out of the line and pushed you to the front of the line, saying you don't need to be sitting here in no line, and she moved the wheelchair and took you all the way up to the front so you could go in before everybody.
Well, when Colin Powell came over to shake hands with us, I got up out of that wheelchair so that I could shake his hand standing up. Thank you.
Brother Kwame.
Brother Billy, did you hear me? Brother Kwame said that was his sister that pushed you.
No, I didn't know that. But again, as I said, thank her. Give her a kiss for me that I can't.
All right.
That's
what I was going to ask you, Brother Kwame. That was your sister?
Yeah, she was visiting the museum, and she remembered me talking about the Tuskegee Airmen, and she asked him, was he one of the Dodas, and he said yes, and she said, you don't need to be sitting back here in this line. All these people need to let you come to the front. And she pushed him all the way up to the front of the line.
That was your sister.
Right.
That was my sister.
That's amazing.
A small, small boy.
I let her speak for Brother Ray.
You don't realize.
You're right.
I thank her so much. There were two of us the day at the museum. She pushed me. They put us on an elevator and took us down in the basement, because that's where the airplane we learned to fly in is, in the basement of the museum. So
right.
Give her a special hug for me, and I thank you.
That is nice.
Mm. Yes,
okay,
that was.
He told me that about that several times, Brother Kwame. I mean, because how important it was that the lady pushed him up. But look at God. That's your
sister. She's on the phone. She'll tell you. See,
How
are you?
Bless you, darling.
How are you?
Thank you for joining me.
That's Kim Weston, who sang with Marvin Gaye, and Elder Fauntleroy, Billy Fauntleroy, the Dota that you pushed up. He's on the line now.
Oh, wow, wow. In at the African American Museum in D.C.
Right. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Blessing for me.
Oh, yeah. When I saw you, I said, there's no way they should be in line. Move these people to the front. You remember that?
God bless you.
Yeah.
Oh. What's your name, Dolly? Oh,
my name is Cecilia.
Miss
Cecilia. Okay.
Thank you for pushing
Brother William up front. And that he still has his memory to carry him.
He has talked about it so many times, Dolly, how much he appreciated. He said, the little lady said, you don't belong back here. And so you're finding out how you impressed, your impression on him that day.
Oh, yeah.
Look at God.
And the funny thing about it is, 2 days before, we were at the museum, and when I saw him there, I said, gosh, look at there. This is unbelievable. I took pictures and everything.
That's one of
them. Brother Bill, do you still have the pictures?
I'm sure I do, because Marcia Crockett, her father, jacket is in the display down there.
Yes,
that is one of the things that when the young lady pushed me, I never looked up to see who it was. When you're sitting in a wheelchair, it's kind of difficult.
Yes, you're in the wheelchair.
I
had someone take a picture of me.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But I had somebody take a picture of me pushing you in the wheelchair.
Okay.
Oh.
So
well,
I'll send that picture to my brother, and let him send that picture to you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. That would be great. That's great.
Yeah, I could get it to you, Sister Antoinette. She sent it to me, and I'll send it to you, and then we can – I'll either get it to Brother Ray. You text it to Brother Ray, and he'll get it to Billy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let me ask both of y'all. Meeting each other again after these years, and meeting each other on this radio show, how does it make y'all feel? For it to come full circle like this,
I'm amazed. Make me feel like I'm somebody.
And you are. You will always be.
You know what, Jen?
I am just related to come to you.
Thank you. I am elated to talk to you.
You
never know who you're touching.
You never know.
Always be very careful about when you're talking to people because you don't know who you're talking about.
You're right.
So that's right. So thank you.
Yeah,
I might have opened my big fat mouth saying some lady was pushing me. I know who she was. Well, now I know, and now I can thank you.
Isn't that something? Hey, no problem.
Yeah.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah. And thank you for being here with us. Thank you, Brother Kwame, for bringing her.
Yes. All right. I had to do it because she showed me the picture when we were, and I let her talk to Brother Ray. I called her and she showed me, and I said, I know his brother. And I spoke to Brother Ray.
Small world.
And Walter bought a Chevrolet from General Motors in Detroit, and I flew up there with him to drive it back to Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
Kim, you want to tell me what day was?
1955.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
What was 1955? I missed something.
He bought a brand new Chevrolet. We picked it up at the manufacturer and drove it back.
Okay.
To D.C.
In 1955?
A little story. Mm-hmm. 1955. And I had to stop in Pittsburgh or somewhere around Pittsburgh for him to catch a plane to get back to Washington for some congressional meeting that he had.
But today, Ms. Kim, you want to tell him what today was?
Today
in Detroit.
Right.
The Western Day in Detroit. Designated by Mayor Coleman Young, who was also a Tuskegee Airman.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yes.
Wow.
I was saying, but this lets me know that this was predestined by God above. Ain't no way in the world for this to happen without God.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know?
Amen.
Right about that. Yes.
And you know she sang happy birthday to Mama on her birthday when I called her and told her.
Oh, did she?
Mm. Yeah, but I'm going to tell you what your mama told me.
She sang happy birthday to my uncle when it was his birthday.
Yeah. What did you say, Antoinette?
I said you sang happy birthday to my uncle a couple of years ago when it was his birthday, remember?
Yeah. Well, the day since you tell my birthday, the day is my 3rd birthday. And I apologize because I didn't reach out. I wasn't able to reach out to Martha. That's why I was thinking, well, maybe we shouldn't do it. Then after that, but we said, maybe we should do it tomorrow. But I'm glad that we went on with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to Martha, so I'm going to say happy birthday to Martha anyway. Y'all sing with me.
Yes.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Miss Martha.
Yeah. Martha Reeves, maybe we could get her tomorrow and to let her something. But
yeah.
I know her name was on the table.
Martha Reeves was born in 1941. So she's a year older than you, Miss Kim?
No, darling, I'm a year and a half older than her.
You're right.
I was born in 39.
Yes.
I was born in December 39, so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was looking at 42. I had my mind on 42. My mother was born in 42. Yeah.
Yeah. You think, you say you replaced me, well, you can't replace me, but you calling me your new mama.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
Thank
what
you.
Time
all
is
right.
It?
Yeah, all right. Thank you again.
Well, the ground doesn't go without saying in the
live broadcast.
No, I had a
no,
great
we're
time.
No, we're in overtime. Yeah, 29 minutes.
Thank everybody for inviting me. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah, but Ms.
Oh,
Brown, I want
you
to
for being with
say
us.
Something about Dota Brown to let the people know who he was, would you?
Yes, please.
He was like Billy Fauntleroy. Larry was 17 years old when he went in October of 1944. He was in the graduating class of 46C. And he did the identical thing that Dota Fauntleroy did. When the war was over, he separated for the good of the government and returned, went to college, and became a doctor and continued to give back to the community and speak to the about the Tuskegee Airmen everywhere he could possibly. If anybody would listen, he would tell the story. He went to all the schools, all the universities, library, churches, everywhere, and told the story of the Tuskegee Airmen. He was a historian regarding Tuskegee Airmen. He was just an amazing man, a God-fearing man, just a good Christian, a good father, and a good husband. And I was truly blessed to be married to such an incredible man.
Wow, that's wonderful. Now,
I really enjoy it.
Between your husband and brother Billy,
Yeah,
okay,
I was
in
class 45I, Ms. Brown. So I was an upperclassman to your husband.
That's right, you were.
Like you say, those men, they came back as instructors to teach us what we needed to do. My instructor in basic, where I learned to dogfight and fly at night and fly with instruments and stuff, was Leonard Jackson out of Fort Worth, Texas. Black Jack, they called him. But he was, he taught me well. As did all of those guys that came back. I'm sure your husband may have had one of the guys that came back as an instructor.
Yeah, Ace Laughlin came back as his instructor.
Yeah, because they came back, and when you talk about the bag, the crab in the barrel, that doesn't apply to Tuskegee Airmen.
It does not.
Because they helped. Anybody that came in and wanted to fly, they helped them to do it. And, you know, we talk about the pilots and stuff, but there were 15,000 people who were what they call Tuskegee Airmen.
Right.
They included ladies and men, and pilots and others. Some
That's
of
right.
them were.
Others that are not veterans.
That's right. You're right.
Now, Brother Billy, what does being a Dota mean to you?
What does what?
A Dota mean to you, being a Tuskegee Airman. What does it mean to you?
Documented original Tuskegee Airman.
So what does it mean to you?
That means that, you know, I'm very proud to be a member of that group. I came out of the service, still hadn't graduated from high school, and that was because when the World War II ended, they had all aviation cadets in the United States were called surplus, and that's white or black. And they gave you a choice of staying in or going home.
Right.
I chose to go home because, as I said, I didn't have a high school education. And I went home. Fortunately, I went to Howard University and met a lady that impressed me. And after a year or so of courting, I asked her to marry me. And she said, no, I won't marry you until you get a job. I quit college and went to work.
So you had a good excuse to quit school this time. So your mom couldn't fuss at you this time, huh?
Yeah. And you know, when I finally graduated from college, my brother was the pastor of our church. And he gave her a
your
PhD.
Brother Walter.
He gave her a PhD, a put him through. But that's like I said, it's all based upon my experience with the Tuskegee Airmen, really. And after we were married a while, she said, you know, I thought you were lying when you were talking about the Tuskegee Airmen. And she met a couple of them, two of them, were my very best friends. And she said, but when I met these guys and their wives, it made a difference, and it did. Kim, you know my house.
You and your wife were together for over 60 years.
61 years, 11 months, and 15 days.
All right. And that's true love.
Yeah. She would have been 62 years. She died on June the 3rd in 2011, and that would have been if she had been around on the 18th of June, we would have celebrated our 62nd anniversary.
Yeah.
So, like I said, to meet and hear the young lady that pushed me in the wheelchair, I remember the situation. But like I said, you know, you can't look back and see who's pushing you. Thank you. That's another wonderful experience that I can tell people about when I talked about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes, and look, and for you to be able to talk with Miss Cecilia.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no, it was my pleasure. I'm just enjoying listening to your talk.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, you guys have a good night. All right.
Well,
I'll send my brother the picture.
I'm looking forward to getting it.
Thank you so much joining us.
Not a problem. Thank you. Have a good day.
Tell your mama I love her.
Thank you, too.
Love you, too.
Tell your mother I love her.
I will. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Oh, well, I mean, that's something that just went full circle.
Yeah.
They just took my breath away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kim, when I see Raymond, I'm going to hug him for introducing me to you. Thank you so much.
You know what? This reminds me of last year. Last year, in the celebration, a young lady
a young lady came to the fair, and I met this lady on the Greyhound bus.
Uh-huh.
And she wasn't feeling good. And I gave her some echinacea.
Oh, okay.
I gave
her. Hey, you must carry that around with you.
I gave her some echinacea and something for her stomach. And then when the bus stopped, we went in the ladies' room. And I didn't see the lady no more until last year at Kim Weston Day.
I'll be darned.
Wow.
So this,
this is the second
miraculous thing on Kim Weston Day.
Wow.
Yeah, that Miss Kim still tells you to take the echinacea. Take it from somebody who knows, because I can say something's wrong with you. Did you take the echinacea? And didn't I tell you, as soon as it starts, you fight it.
Yeah. But that's a part of what happens. We allow whatever it is to work on us while we talk about it, but we don't fight back.
Yeah.
You're right, Miss Kim. And
okay.
I've been guilty too many times. But I think I got you back the other night. I asked you, did you take your echinacea? And you didn't take it.
You got to practice what you preach.
Amen.
And Miss Kim.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you don't have no champagne, because you won't do like you did with Martha Reeves last year on our birthday.
Oh.
That wasn't last year. That was a couple of years ago. That was, what, 2 years back, 2 or 3 years back, Miss Kim?
Okay, yeah. Well, I remember when she was saying, was it Miss Kim's birthday or Martha's birthday?
Miss Kim's birthday.
Okay, I got it wrong.
I think it was like 79th or 78th.
80th birthday.
For those that don't know,
It was. I think it was your 80th birthday. Miss Kim, I have a message for you. Happy Kim Weston Day. They enjoyed the show. I enjoyed your radio show with Dalton Wham Fontroyd and other distinguished guests. May God continue to live and favor you always, Cousin Alma.
She's the one that was with.
That I got for you. Pardon me?
I was going to tell Dota that's who brought me to his house when I was in Washington.
Okay. Yep, I really enjoyed that afternoon. I wasn't a very good host.
Yes, you were.
I really enjoyed talking to you too.
We had a good time.
Okay, well.
We did. They're honoring Dota on the 22nd of August. Tell them about that.
Oh, the 22nd. No, the 15th of August, they're going to honor me at the Tuskegee Airmen golf tournament.
Oh, great.
What day?
That's a Monday. Monday, the 15th of August.
August.
We have a tournament every year under General Davis's name. And I usually go not to play, but to meet with the golfers and take pictures with them after the thing. And then they're going to honor me on that day, so.
That's great. Congratulations.
My prayers go up that I'm around to participate.
Oh, you will be.
Yeah. Last year, General McGee was there with us. He's gone now, 102 years old.
And yep.
Yeah.
Ms. Brown, you told me about somebody that's 108.
108, Mr. Flowers, yes.
Flowers, yeah. Okay,
he's the oldest living Tuskegee Airman.
Yeah. There was a Flowers in our area here that a school is named for, and he died several years ago. But he was one of the few Tuskegee Airmen who finished as a student, and became a pilot, and then became an instructor. He never went overseas or anything. He just went from graduating and then became an instructor. And there's a high school named for him in Maryland.
Mr. Flowers, his name is James Clayton Flowers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's
and,
true.
He is 108 years old.
Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Amazing.
He lives in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
So.
Uh-huh.
I've got a classmate in Arizona. I don't know. He's about my age. He and I were about the same age. But I was at a convention in Philadelphia when television people were interviewing him. And the television guy asked him, he said, I understand you got your black belt with Chuck Norris. And he said, yeah, and I yell, what? Because this guy was the quietest guy in the class. You know how there are people in your class doing stuff that you never notice them because they're not loud and they just do what they have to do.
Right.
Well, he was one of those do what you have to do guys. And Asa Herring stayed in and became a jet pilot, and I understand he taught the Russians how to fly jets. It was one of the contributions from my classmates who, like I said, all made a great impression on this young Turkey out of D.C.
Wow.
Asa Herring. I haven't talked to him for a while. I need to call to see how he's doing.
Yeah. I need to make an announcement, y'all. Don't forget Drive Ons on Sunday for the Helios Belios at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And, well, Brother Eddie has to let me know if we're doing a show on Wednesday night. If so, then that would be Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And Brother Ray, Billy's brother, with the drumming on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, no matter where you are in the world, at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be drumming to lift every voice. And it is a lot of countries have joined the drum call that was started just a year or two ago. That Brother Ray had a dream that God had told him to drum. So the drumming is really going forth all around the world, and it's for God to intervene into the things that are going on into this world. So I want to encourage everyone to drum. Have your family members drum. You know, it's just, you know, doing it at your home. You don't have to meet up anywhere, not unless you choose to. But it's, you know, everyone just drum, you know, everyone drumming at 1 accord at 3 o'clock around the world. Okay.
Okay.
So that's it for the announcement, y'all. Okay, so with that, we have 9 minutes left in this broadcast, and I don't want to keep y'all up too much later.
Well, I just want to say to God be the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
To God be the glory and thank all of you thank all of you for participating, those of you that listened and didn't comment. I think this is something that we need to do on a regular basis. And when I was talking about the Tuskegee Airmen and the convention, as Ms. Brown was telling me, we are not contributing, and we need to find a way to make a contribution. Okay?
Yes, I was thinking about doing.
Thank you all.
And thank you, Ms. Kim and Ms. Brown. I was thinking about that do a GoFundMe page.
Well, you know, we have a. You can go to our Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated page, and right there's a donate button. It could be $5 or $10, whatever you can afford. It makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you want to give that page out, that web link out, so that people can go to that and, you know, donate, so that it can help with the families, so that they will be able to attend the conference in September.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the web page is www.TuskegeeAirmen.inc. And when you do that, it will automatically bring you up, tell you a story, and a donate button will show up, and you hit that donate button, and you can donate, you know, with Zelle, Cash App, Score, PayPal, anything, and any amount is appreciated. And that will also help pay for us to take care of the donors and the surviving spouses to make sure they are well taken care of.
Ms. Brown, would you please explain to them that we have 50 chapters throughout the world of the Tuskegee Airmen.
We do.
And Ms. Brown is in the headquarters in California. So
right.
Thank you.
And I can tell you about me. I donate to the Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated all the time. I just got money for scholarship for children because I personally have been blessed. And my husband and I always give back. And Larry gave scholarships every year.
Every year.
And he left in his will that I continue to do that. And I do it every year.
Yes, which is a wonderful thing. It truly is. And we don't want to forget the donors because of the donors and the things that they did in World War II, we had the freedoms that we wouldn't have had it not been for them. So
that's
we
right.
truly give our honor to them. And, you know, we thank them for all of the work and for being brave enough to face racism and everything else and to go over and to fight and to come home and to be ashamed.
You tell me how many 17-year-old kids you know if there's a war coming that's going to go all say sign me up and send me.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have that like you had with the donors back in the 40s.
No, you're not.
These kids, 17 years old, don't want to get out of bed, let alone go sign up to get in the Army or join the military.
Yeah, and also I think that with the young folks now, they have a different view of it because of the video games. You know, they're not seeing it. I don't even know, is the equipment the same? Is it also like a joystick or anything that they're doing now where it's more like a game to them so that they don't really value life like that.
But hey,
in my opinion,
we kill each other.
Go ahead,
I
brother Fontour.
Yes. Yes.
No, you were saying something.
Hello?
And I had cut across you. I'm sorry.
Oh no. I was just supporting what you were saying. I'm an amen person. So okay. I'm Baptist.
All right.
I'm Baptist.
Hey, it's to the internet.
I'm non-denominational.
Can I say something to the internet?
Pardon? Yes, go ahead, Joshua.
No, I want to. I'm not a young person, but I can kind of speak for younger people that's younger than me. But I think one of the problems is that with young people, they don't see the success of what the Tuskegee Airmen brought. That's part of the problem. And it has not been taught to them, that success. And so that's part of the problem. If you take a 17-year-old and ask him about the Tuskegee Airmen, he might not even know. And they say, well, what's their success? I just heard they flew. That's it. Because they haven't been told the success. And then again, they haven't been told just in a general form how to take our history seriously. That's another problem. So I think that's part of the problem right there. When I lived in Los Angeles, Pasadena, California, I met several Tuskegee Airmen that I didn't even know was Tuskegee Airmen until they told me. See, and this was at this time, I was probably in my early 30s, and they pointed at me and said, well, he's a Tuskegee Airman. I just looked at the guy. You know, and at this time, I was kind of halfway fully coming to my own consciousness and my own development. And I said, wow. And I just kept looking at the guy. He looked at me, winked his eye at me, you know. So, and he was an older guy himself. And I kept thinking, well, I said, well, how old are these guys? And that's my brain. So, well, I said, well, how old are they? These must be some old. Then I realized that I had to go back and look at some history on them. I said, wow, these guys are, they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
You see. And so, but yeah, so that's what when you're looking at young people in that fashion, the history hasn't been told to them as success. It's always about struggle. So when they hear about Tuskegee Airmen being successful like that, some of them can't believe that they were successful. One dude told me, he said that he thought the Tuskegee Airmen was actually just a myth. Seriously, he told me that.
Oh, wow.
I said, Tuskegee Airmen were real.
You're right. My first husband's brother said that he thought they were just a myth. He didn't believe they were real.
Right. Yeah, it's just weird. And I said, no, these were real pilots. These were real pilots that were very successful in what they did. And the guy said, wow, I didn't know that. But his point was that because they've been told for so long that black people just have to have struggle, they couldn't believe that we had success.
But could I add to that?
Yes, go ahead, Brother Kwame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I listened to Brother Elder Fauntleroy speak about him when he came in and signed up at the age he was, and he didn't have a high school diploma. Here's a high school dropout flying planes and fighting in a war. We've got people with degrees that probably couldn't take what they did.
Right.
You had a president who didn't even go in.
Yeah.
The last president you had, yeah, he contributed nothing to the United States except what he wanted for himself.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is true. We had a couple that didn't, because look, I mean, in my lifetime, because Clinton didn't go in, you know, you're right, Trump didn't go in, and that, you know, during
Obama
wartime.
Didn't go in. Yeah, Obama's Obama. Black president didn't serve in the military.
No.
A lot of, yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Yeah. That's the purpose of this here, because people can't do nothing about it, what they don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
You're right, Ms. Kim.
And as of right now, there's no appreciation for America. I don't care what nobody say, even though the people they weren't including us. They were not including us in all the documents and things that they wrote, but God included us, okay? As a matter of fact,
yeah.
He destined it for us.
And this is what we're doing on this show right now, is documenting history that can be played back in the archives, because once it's on the web, it's there forever. The part of it is that we're recording what Ms. Kim says, what Elder Fauntleroy said, what we're all saying about our story, how we know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, yeah, I'm going to take closing remarks. So I'm going to start first with Elder Fauntleroy.
Well, thank you all. Thank you all for listening to me. I don't represent all of the Tuskegee Airmen. I represent myself as a part of the guys that did so much to save our country from Nazism. So thank you. Thank you. And may God bless you all.
Thank you and bless you.
Yes, thank you, and bless you, of course. And Yahshua, do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to give?
I just want to say thank you, Sister Antoinette, for allowing me to call in. That's for starters.
Of course.
Thank your guests. We all live and learn, and that's really the bottom line. And I don't care how old you are, what age you are. And I've been taught that a long time ago. So, I'm glad to see the brother, the Tuskegee Airman, on the phone. As he was talking, I was thinking about the Tuskegee Airman that I met when I lived in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And like I said, these guys are older guys. So I got to think. I said, well, how many regiments of Tuskegee Airmen did they have? So that's when I was kind of curious about that. I said, it must have been more than one regiment. And sometimes when you talk about the Tuskegee Airmen, some people only think it's only one regiment. But I said, no, there were quite a few regiments of Tuskegee Airmen. Am I right to say that?
Yes.
Okay. And that's what I thought. So, but thank you and thank the guests. And thank Ms. Kim West. That's the first time I've ever heard your voice singing, and I say that because I do keep up with a lot of our pioneer singers and musicians. I do keep up with their histories, but that's the first time I've heard you sing, and I was very like, wow.
Thank you, Noah.
I mean, I said, here's another one that we don't even. I mean, it's so many of them.
No,
you know, I said, here's another one.
You heard It Takes Two, Baby, right? With Marvin Gaye.
Huh? Yes,
that's
I did. Yeah.
That's Miss
yeah,
Kim.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great.
Okay.
Great.
Let me go. Miss Kim, can you repeat that?
I'm sure he's heard Lift Every Voice.
Yes, and Lift Every Voice. Yes.
Yes.
Kwame, and then Mrs. Brown. Brother Kwame?
Well, I want to give thanks to what Ms. Kim always says, to God be the glory, because it's through the power of the Creator that we're all here experiencing what we have in making this historical moment. And I'm most appreciative, because they say when you educate a woman, you educate a nation. So,
amen.
Sister Antoinette, Ms. Brown, and Ms. Kim Weston, you are the proof of what has been said. When you educate a woman, you educate a nation, because our nation now knows through this archive what has been our truth about the Tuskegee Airmen and about what the power of women that sang for different causes and a wife of a Tuskegee Airman to be able to carry on her legacy from her husband, who now she carries on and carries on in a good way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Tommy. Mrs. Brown, would you like to give your closing remarks?
Yes, I would like to thank all of you for the invite. And second, to have you all have us all on the call where we could ask questions, listen to others talk, and learn. I think more of this. I feel as though Miss Weston is my sister. I definitely feel like Billy Fauntleroy and I are sisters and brothers.
Thank you.
I know he and my husband were brothers at Tuskegee. My heart is just overjoyed. I don't know if Kim Weston told anyone. I don't even know if she told you, Billy, that she is going to be the guest of honor at the convention this year performing for the Tuskegee Airmen.
Oh, okay. She didn't tell me that. Thank you. Now you know I've got to be there.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
We asked Miss Weston, and she, if we could count on her, and she never hesitated. She said, just tell me what you want me to do, and I'll be there. And Jerry, of course, is a very young man in his late 50s, and he was not aware of who Kim Weston was. But after he talked to Dota Fauntleroy, Miss Weston, he went home and Googled Miss Weston. And he was so excited, Dota Fauntleroy, that Miss Weston had graciously donated her time and said she would be there and help us celebrate. And we are truly looking forward to this year's convention in having as many donors are available, their surviving spouses, and in particular, our guest of honor, which is going to be Miss Kim Weston.
All right.
Yes. Amen. That's beautiful. Amen. Yes. Yes, Lord.
We are going to do the same thing for Miss Weston. We are going to make sure that she is taken care of, that she gets to her flight, that she gets to the hotel, that her accommodations are taken care of, all her meals and everything are taken care of. And we want to also just shower her with a lot of love for volunteering to be there for our daughters. It means a lot to President Burton and to all of us on the board of directors, and to all the family members of DOTAS. It means an awful lot. And I, on behalf of the board of directors, Ms. Weston, I thank you very kindly.
All right.
Bless you. I have you.
That's an amen.
Amen.
I have amen.
God has put the Tuskegee Airmen. I say, I have no choice. God has put the Tuskegee Airmen in my heart. And whatever he says is all right with me.
Me too, Papa.
Yes.
Yes,
from the time you were a little girl when your aunt gave you the airplane.
Right. 1944, I was given I was 4 years old, and I was given a wooden airplane from Japan with a red tail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I became aware of the Tuskegee Airmen. And when I tell you God put them in my heart, I used to have nightmares about the Japanese invading, and I'd be running around trying to find some place to hide to keep them from finding me in my nightmare. After I got that wooden airplane, I don't remember having any more nightmares.
That's
amazing. Wow. Well, Ms. Kim,
I thank
you, and I thank everyone for being with us tonight. And
thank
I hope
you
that y'all will join us, Wednesday. Again, I have to check with Brother Eddie, but definitely don't forget Drive Bones on Sunday for the Helios Filios and Brother Ray at 3 p.m. for the drum call. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone for being with us. And don't forget to donate to the DOTAs. And everyone have a good night.
Same.
And I'm sorry
good
I can't
night.
Let anything out. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Love you all.
Love you all.
Love
good
you
night.
Too.
Everybody rest well. Thank us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To God be the glory. To God.